This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime. This week, we begin with This Is Your FBI and The Corrupt City, their episode from February 15th, 1946. After that, it's Crime Classics and The Good Ship Jane, their story from February 24th, 1954.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This is Your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Before opening tonight's file, let's give a few moments' thought to a frequently asked question. Since these programs began almost a year ago, a number of people have written to the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States asking how they could become members of the Equitable Society. They agree with the aims of the society and want to know what they have to do to join. Well, of course, the answer is very simple. When you take out life insurance with the Equitable Society, you automatically become a member of the society. You become part of a great cooperative enterprise that is run entirely for the benefit of its members. Yes, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States is a voluntary association of men and women who have joined together for security, who, because they have banded together, are able to assure each individual member greater security than he could attain by his own unaided effort. Tonight's FBI file, The Corrupt City.
Which of these two, standing before the Supreme Court of Public Opinion, would merit the severer judgment? The greater moral condemnation. The professional criminal whose business is violating the law for profit, or he who occupies a position of public trust and uses its power to protect the criminal for self-gain. It is eloquent testimony of the worthiness of a system of free elections that there is in America a minimum of corruption in public office. It is proof of the essential integrity of the overwhelming majority of those who seek office. Proof also of the conscientiousness of the people in selecting their public servants. And, as demonstrated in tonight's case from the files of your FBI, it is proof of the uncompromising devotion of America's law enforcement officers to their sacred duty to uphold the law against all transgressors, no matter who they may be. In a Midwestern city along the waterfront, midnight darkness and a light fog shroud the deserted docks and warehouses. A little while ago, a man standing in the deeper shadows behind a bale of cargo heard a large powerboat idle its motors and watched it drift in against the pier. Two of its crew clambered onto the pier, passed several heavy crates to those on board, and then...
How many more cases, Mike?
That's all of them.
Okay, get aboard and let's shove off.
The man in the shadows snaps on a flashlight and steps swiftly out along the pier.
Just a minute, then. Huh? Stay where you are.
Who are you?
This badge will tell you who I am.
Oh, cop, huh?
That's right. Do you have authority to move those cases of cargo?
Sure. Why?
Because there's been quite a lot of cargo moved from piers lately without any authority.
Hop aboard, Mike.
Wait a minute. I want to see your papers authorizing movement to those cases.
My copper boy.
Let me straighten this copper out first.
Well, go ahead, stupid. We're pulling out of here.
Stop that boat! Looks like you missed them, copper, so you'd better arrest me.
Did you want to see me, Chief?
Yes, come in, Donovan. Donovan?
Yes, sir?
If I were asked what I think of you and your work, I'd say you're one of the most promising young men on the force.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And the thing that really sold me on your earnestness about your work was last fall when you asked for a leave so you could attend the FBI's National Academy. And at your own expense, too. And that diploma you came back with, well, I guess I was almost as proud of it as you were.
Thanks, Chief.
You have a great future ahead of you as a law enforcement officer. If you can stand the test of hard knocks.
Well,
They can come in a million forms. Sometimes they're hard enough to break a man's spirit completely, if it's not strong enough to take it.
Yes, sir.
Personally, I want to commend you, Donovan, for the arrest you made 2 nights ago at Pier 26.
Thank you, sir, but I
read your report. I think you're on the right track. And somehow that gang of river thieves has got to be broken up.
I bungled the job the other night by getting only one, but I'll get the rest of them, sir.
The man you arrested was released this morning.
I'll get... What did you say, sir?
Mike Haynes was released this morning.
Released? But...
And here is your first test in the school of hard knocks, Donovan. A statement from the councilman in charge of our appropriation. You may read it all later, but I'll read only the last paragraph.
Okay, sir.
Therefore, in view of the evidence furnished me by reliable authority, it is my conclusion that Detective Donovan acted wholly without cause and recklessly endangered the lives of the crew by unprovoked and unjustified use of his pistol.
What?
Therefore, I demand his transfer to another assignment, patrolling a beat, and his promotion canceled.
Well, that's a pretty sordid story, Donovan.
Well, Mr. Craig, I didn't come here to the FBI office looking for sympathy.
You don't have to tell us that.
I don't blame the chief for not going to bat for me. His hands were tied. Apparently that goes for everybody on the force.
Yes, I know.
I don't know who the Mr. Big is who's running the show in this town, but... Well, whoever he is, there's one set of hands he can't tie. The FBI.
That's right. But where's our angle in the case, Donovan? There has to be one or we can't touch it.
Well, those goods were part of an interstate shipment.
Where's your evidence?
Well, the river is the state line, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, the rest of the gang got away in the boat the other night, and they headed for the other side of the river.
But you don't know for sure that the boat went all the way.
No.
It could have turned and cut back to this side at a point farther up or downstream.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I guess I was just a little overeager to get you boys into the picture.
Well, we may get into it yet. But until there's a definite federal violation, I'd suggest you keep your eyes open for anything on Mike Haynes. Watch where he goes, who his pals are. Maybe you'll stumble onto something.
Yeah, something Mr. Big can't cover up.
Yeah. It might be pretty risky business for you.
I'll get on Haynes' trail starting tonight.
Busy, Sam?
No. Come on in.
Yeah, got me sprung, huh?
Yeah. I don't know why, though.
What do you mean?
That was a real stupid play, Mike.
What?
Playing the big shot for that copper. You acted like you had protection sticking out all over you.
Well, that's the deal, ain't it?
No, not for publication, sucker. They're still honest cops, you know.
Well, how was I to know?
The big guy didn't like it. Oh, he sprung you this time, but from now on, take it easy.
Something's got to be done about that cop.
Why?
He's been tailing me ever since I was sprung. I go in for a beer, and he comes in for a beer. I go in the bowling alley, and he comes in. I go home, and he walks by the house.
Well, he hasn't tailed you across the river any time, has he?
How could he? That's out of bounds for him. Well, the guy's driving me crazy.
Maybe that's what he wants to do.
Huh?
Figures you'll get too jumpy sometime and make the wrong kind of move.
Not me, Sam.
We're not going to take a chance on that.
What do you mean?
You want to get that copper off your neck?
Sure.
And here's what you do. Tomorrow, as soon as you know...
Can I see you a minute, Mr. Craig?
Oh, come ahead, Donovan. Any evidence on a federal violation yet?
No, but I've got a pretty good idea how they operate now. They've got a legitimate front here in River City.
What kind?
It's a small river freight business. They don't do much. I watched it for 3 days.
But it gives them a front just the same.
Yeah, and license to operate any kind of boat they want to anywhere on the river.
Mm-hmm. Who's the company?
It's Sam West, an ex-rum runner, but I'm pretty sure he's not Mr. Big.
Where do they keep the stolen stuff?
Across the river.
You have proof?
Well, I can prove that they go across the river.
How do you know?
I watched them with glasses last night in the moonlight.
Oh?
It was clear, you see, and I could follow the boat all the way across to the pier line on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned upstream, and I lost it in the shadows.
Were they carrying stolen merchandise?
Well, I couldn't swear that, but... Well, at least we know two facts now. They steal merchandise, and they operate across the river.
I'm going to send the Bureau headquarters a report on this, Donovan. But I'm afraid we can't move in yet.
Okay, but I'll make you a bet, Craig.
What's that?
Before I finish my war of nerves against Mike Haynes, you'll have something to move in on.
Well, don't stick your neck out too far. River City needs it.
What are you drinking, mister?
Well, maybe I'm not drinking.
That's about all you can do in here.
The sign outside says, bar and grill.
Okay. How'd you like some nice grilled salami on graham crackers? That's what we got left.
Thanks.
You looking for somebody?
Yeah, I thought I saw a fella come in here just ahead of me.
I guess I never seen him.
Uh-huh. You got a back door?
Yeah, it's out back.
Thanks again.
Looking for somebody, copper?
Yeah.
Mike Haynes?
That's right.
He's right behind you.
What? If...
He's right behind you. There you are, Mike. Now the guy don't bother you.
We'll return to this FBI file in just a moment. In the meantime, since it's still only a few hours past Valentine's Day, let's consider a subject that's very close to every man's heart and every woman's. This week at the Equitable Society, one of the representatives told me about a unique Valentine which he helped prepare. The giver of this Valentine was a young man who came home from the Navy just 3 months ago to marry his childhood sweetheart. It seems that this newly wedded husband made up a giant Valentine complete with cupids, forget-me-nots, and all the customary fixings. And in the center of it all was a brand new life insurance policy in the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Well, when you come to think of it, what better proof of his love can a husband give his wife than to provide her with the security of life insurance? You see, here in the Equitable Society, we're not just guardians of the dollars and cents sent in by our members. We're guardians of human hopes and human happiness. Our job is to keep home fires burning and to give boys and girls wider opportunities for education and advancement. Our mission is to help banish fear from the hearts of men, to save widows and elderly people from the humiliations of poverty, charity, and dependence. So is it any wonder that we of the Equitable Society are proud to call ourselves life insurance men and life insurance women? And that we're equally proud to say that this week and every week for 86 years, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States has been building security for you,
your home, and your country. And now back to the FBI file, The Corrupt City.
Every day and night, 24 hours around the clock, your law enforcement officers risk their lives to keep their covenant with you, to protect your lives and property, and to uphold the sanctity of your laws. And many of them risk their lives in keeping that faith. It is nearly noon now, the second day after Officer Donovan walked into the trap set for him by Mike Haynes of the River Gang. Agent in charge Craig of the River City office of the FBI is sitting at his desk with Special Agent Tom Farrell.
I'll take it, Tom.
Okay.
Craig speaking. Oh, hello, Chief. What? Yeah, I was afraid of something like that.
Where?
Uh-huh. I see. Well, I guess that puts it up to us now, Chief. And we're moving in on the case right away. Thank you, sir. And we'll keep in touch with you. Right.
Trouble?
Yes, that young policeman, Donovan.
What about him?
A farmer on the other side of the river found him in a ravine this morning. 5 slugs in him, but he's still alive. He had to be kidnapped.
Okay, what's our first move?
Not much doubt about whose work it is.
Want to round up the gang now?
No. No, we've got to get the proof first. And we'd better start on that stolen goods angle. That might lead us to Mr. Big himself.
Mr. Big could be that councilman.
Why?
He made the chief break Donovan, didn't he?
Proving what?
Well, in his memo, he referred to evidence furnished by a certain reliable authority. But he could be that certain authority, you know.
Yes, it's possible.
The chief of police might be mixed up with him.
Oh, I doubt that. I'll bet my last cent the chief is honest. Chiefs of police are clean, Tom. They've got to be to get that far. Sometimes they've got to take a dirty order and like it, and ask no questions in order to do a bigger job.
Well, where do we start on this case?
Well, let's watch their boats first, and see if they lead us to a cache somewhere on the other side of the river.
Okay.
And then we'll figure out a way to get Mr. Big.
Hi, Mr. Adams.
Come in, Sam.
You want to see me?
Yes.
Okay, what's on your mind?
That policeman.
Who are you talking about?
Donovan.
Oh. Okay, so he was getting too nosy, so we got rid of him.
Did I tell you to?
I take protection from you, Adams, not orders.
Really?
Now, what are you squawking about Donovan for? He might have found his way all the way up to you, you know.
I could have handled that.
Are you kidding? It goes to the papers, then, and you can't handle them. You may be the party boss, councilman, and run everything in this town, but you can't...
Shut up. Now listen to me.
Okay.
You know what you've done by kidnapping Donovan? Shooting him, dumping him across the state line?
What?
That's not a local police case. That belongs to the FBI.
Huh?
You heard me.
All right, but that ain't my worry. Protection's still your job, Adams.
You can't fix the FBI.
So, what are you going to do?
I'm going to give the orders from now on, or pull out. You and the boys lay low for a few days. No more jobs until I tell you. Understand?
Put a head on that for you, mister?
No, thanks. Well, it goes better with the music when it's flat.
A comedian.
Tom?
Yeah?
Mike Haynes down the bar a ways.
Yeah. Wish we could take him in now.
Don't worry, we'll get him. Looks like he's about ready to shove off, and I imagine he'll head for home.
Well, we've been watching them 3 days now. I haven't moved a boat.
Yeah, they must have gotten orders to lay off for a while.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's get back to the office and plan our next course of action.
What about Haynes?
Let him get home by himself. We've got more important work to do right now.
Sam.
Yeah?
I got a hot tip on something big, Sam.
Big like what?
Big like a big pile of dough.
Oh, the boss said to lay off.
Hey, he likes the cut he gets, don't he?
Well, sure, but...
Then he'll drop his teeth when he hears about this.
What do you got?
Big shipment of nylon.
No kidding.
Yeah, and at present prices, we ought to split $100,000.
Oh, where is it?
It's on Pier 42, waiting for us.
Well, let me get Adams on the phone.
No, leave him out of it. We'll do it now and tell him afterwards.
Suits me.
It is nearly midnight on the river now, and a ferry boat crossing far upstream seems to be the only sign of life on the surface of the water. But 3 hours ago, shortly after dark, 4 small boats put out from the River City shore, deployed, and took up assigned positions. 3 are now hidden in the shadows at widely separated points along the pier line on the far side of the river. The 4th, on this side, is hidden among the pilings under Pier 42. A man speaks into a portable radio transmitter.
Hello? Hello? Agent in charge, Craig. Boat number 1, report, please. Over.
Boat number 2, reporting. Standing by.
Boat number 3, reporting. Standing by.
Boat number 4, reporting. Standing by.
I don't know how much longer we'll have to wait, men. Maybe the plan's not going to work at all, but we'll stick it out.
It's got to work, Craig.
Haynes fell for the tip anyway, I know. Agreed to cut me in.
Maybe Sam West or Mr. Big put the nicks on it.
Time will tell. And it looks like time's beginning to tell a sad story, so I guess we'd...
Craig, listen. Motorboat.
Yeah.
Making this way, too.
Let's not give the boys a false alarm until we're sure it's the boat we're looking for.
That's it, all right. It's cutting in this way.
Yeah. Hello? Hello? Craig speaking. I think we're in. There's a boat heading in for this pier. Keep radio silence and stand by. Hello? Hello? Boat number 2, come in.
Boat number 2, reporting.
They've loaded and pulled away, headed across the river for your position.
Number 2, reporting. They've turned upstream and headed your way, number 3. Over.
Boat number 3, reporting. They've passed my position and continuing upstream toward your position, number 4. Over.
They've had time to pass number 4 by now, Craig. What's happened, I wonder?
Maybe we'll hear something in a minute.
Don't want anything to go wrong now, just
when... Number 4, reporting. They've just put in under a warehouse 50 yards from my position.
Good.
What are your orders, Craig? Over.
Stand by, number 4, until we all reach your position. Then we'll move in. Number 2 and 3, let's go.
All right, boys. You can set those cases down right there. Put yours up on the table here, Mike.
Okay.
Break her open and let's see what we got.
Right.
Adams is going to be real sorry he passed this one up.
Yeah.
It's got to be worth $100,000. That's all for us.
I wouldn't be too sure of that.
Adams.
Tried to pull one without me, didn't you?
So?
You pulled this job against my orders. So from now on... we never heard of each other. Understand?
I hear you.
And if you don't clear out of this county and stay out, I'll have you slammed in jail so far it'll take you 40 years to walk to the front gate.
That's enough, Adams.
Put down that
gun. Oh, no.
I said put down that gun.
No dice. Not until I...
Drop that gun, West.
What?
We're special agents of the FBI. You're all under arrest.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Save it, Adams. You're in this, too.
Now, just a minute. I'd like to explain.
Explain it to the people of River City. The people who trusted you. They'll want to hear it all, I'm sure. Put the handcuffs on him, man.
Right.
And by the way, I think you all should know that Donovan is recovering rapidly and will be happy to testify at your trial.
The vicious political influence of John Adams and his accomplices was broken up by their trial and conviction in a federal court. They were sentenced to long terms in a penitentiary. The significance of tonight's case can be best illustrated by a quote from an article written by J. Edgar Hoover, director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, in this month's American magazine. In this article, Mr. Hoover stated,
"A great menace to successful law enforcement is the crooked politician or policeman who places the pork barrel above the welfare of society. These politicians either corrupt policemen or destroy their morale. I must say here and now that if we are to stem the rise of crime, we must take police and sheriffs, the first line of defense against terrorism, out of the hands of venal politicians. The police department must be placed, like so many municipal fire departments and school systems, in the control of a nonpartisan commission. It may be a hard job, particularly when a powerful political machine exists in a city, but it can be done if every decent citizen puts pressure on his local lawmakers."
Before we tell you about next week's thrilling case from the files of your FBI, a word about a man worth knowing. To your FBI, you look for national security, and to the Equitable Society for the financial security of life insurance. In the past 86 years, the Equitable Life Assurance Society has weathered 4 wars and 7 major depressions. During that time, over $5.5 billion have been paid to policyholders and beneficiaries. This tower of strength, security, and stability is represented in your community by a man whom hundreds of your fellow citizens know as their good friend, the Equitable Society representative, who, like your FBI, is dedicated to the protection of you, your home, and your country.
Next week, we will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, revealing for the first time the inside story of South American espionage, the Pan-American Patriots.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are taken from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The role of J. Edgar Hoover was impersonated. However, all other names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was under the direction of Frederick Steiner, the author was Frank Ferries, and your narrator was Dean Carlton. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. Now, this is Carl Frank, speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time for This is Your FBI.
Friday nights, there are great programs on ABC. For a laughing good time, listen to The Alan Young Show with guest star Vera Vague, which follows next. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. The sound of brace and bit boring into wood. Good wood, mahogany, a hard wood. And since this is 1821, and the tools weren't as finely tempered as they are today, a resisting wood. One needed to really lean into it. Give it muscle. Here's something. Water coming in at last. But how slowly. Just boring holes in the bottom of the ship. That's no way to scuttle it.
Here's an axe. Oh,
As I said, mahogany is a good hard wood, fine for ship's keels. Doesn't hold up under an axe, though. Here comes the Atlantic Ocean. Tonight, my report to you on The Good Ship Jane, Why She Became Flotsam.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Let's talk about schooners for a moment. The first one ever built was in Gloucester, Massachusetts, in 1713, by Captain Andrew Andy Robbie Robinson. The schooner is a fore and aft rigged vessel and was much used in fishing in its earliest days. However, it was soon used as an ocean trader, taken as it was into the hearts of ship owners since it used a smaller crew. The vessel that concerns us here is Jane of Gibraltar, brig rigged fore and schooner rigged aft. She'd carry from 90 to 120 tons and had seen service on all of the seven seas. The Jane was weighing anchor at Gibraltar. On her way to Brazil, her captain was Thomas Johnson, her cabin boy, a youth from Malta named Andrew Camelier, and in the captain's cabin,
10 pipes of sweet oil, 120 barrels of beeswax, 14 round jars of fine oil.
Boy.
Yes, Captain?
How old are you, boy?
16, sir.
You understand the promise I made to your father, boy, that I would return you a man?
Yes, sir.
Continue with the manifest, boy.
300 oblong jars of olives, 14 boxes of raisins, 19 bolts of silk.
Boy.
Yes, sir.
Your father said you were meek, too long, milk fat. Soft. We'll harden you, boy. Put leather where now there's down on your cheek.
Shall I go on the...
Boy.
Yes, sir?
Soften that blonde hair of yours with sea spray and muscle those thin arms. Boy.
Yes, sir?
What have you got in your hand?
Your watch, sir?
I know it's my watch. And I know it was right here on my desk a minute ago.
Well, I fidget, sir.
So your father told me. Put the watch down.
Yes, sir. My father also gave me a book called Tales of the Ocean.
Never mind that. The one with the manifest.
That's all except the dollars, sir.
Read the manifest, boy.
6 18-gallon casks, and one of about 9 and one of about 7 gallons. All filled with Spanish dollars to the number of 38,000. All the above to be delivered to Jose Miguel de Faria, Bahia, Brazil.
You watch your P's and Q's, boy. Stop fidgeting!
Yes, sir.
After which, Andrew never tried to steal the captain's watch again. Instead...
Captain, I saw Seaman Smith opening a cask in the hold and dipping into the olives.
The youth quickly developed a sense of loyalty to his captain and the ship and its cargo. And the captain sensed it.
Good boy.
And did his best to instill the youth with a sense of responsibility. And the next day...
You may flog Seaman Smith, boy. Here, take a whip. Now, don't flinch. Good boy.
And nearly skinned Seaman Smith alive. A youth 2 weeks at sea and manhood busting through all over. Yet with a streak of gentleness.
Mate? Mate Hyman?
Yeah?
I came down here to cruise quarter to see how Seaman Smith feels.
I've seen whipping before, lad. But I got to hand it to you. You're a scientific whipper, you are. And that the truth, Frenchie?
Oui.
Yeah. Old Frenchie's seen whipping, too.
Oui.
You're a one, you know, that lad. Rumply blonde-haired boy like you with cherub face and a whipper like you.
I didn't want to do it. Captain ordered me. I'm so sorry, Mr. Smith.
Can't hear you, laddie.
Tell him how sorry I am. I had to flog him unconscious.
There's a question I'd like to be asking you, lad.
Yes, sir?
Because the crew's all asking it. How did the captain know in the first place that Smitty there was thieving? You tell, Captain, little pink cheeks.
Please.
Please what?
Leave me alone.
Snitcher, ain't you,
Pinky? Leave me alone,
or what?
You see this knife, don't you?
You see this knife, don't you?
Please leave me alone.
Look at him, Frenchy. Look at him with the knife.
Oui.
Funny, ain't it? Well, I'm going to tell you what, laddie. Playing with knives, you be, eh? Well, now I'll be playing, too. A sticking game. And you'll be all over the deck in a second.
Please!
That's your laddie.
Please! Please let me alone!
Now, look, laddie. Take that knife away from my throat.
Then will you let me alone?
Well, you were just gaming, laddie. You're a good gamer, you are. Put the knife away from my throat, laddie. Yeah. That's the laddie.
Yes, sir.
He's the one, ain't he, Frenchy?
Yeah, we.
Please, let's be friendly.
Oh, we're shipmates, we are.
My father told me to make friends.
Shipmates, we are.
We?
The captain doesn't like me.
Don't he now? And you such a gamer and a Nazi.
He thinks I want to break into the hold and steal all those Spanish dollars and dusks. Just because I know where the keys are.
Do you now?
38,000 in Spanish dollars.
Them's the best kind. That's what's in those casks, eh?
Oh, yes, sir.
I could use some of those dollars, couldn't you, Frenchy?
Yeah, oui.
Now, don't you tell the captain I told you about...
All those dollars? Oh, no. We're shipmates.
I'm glad I've made friends.
Yes, oh, you have.
But Mr. Patterson doesn't like me either. He's with the captain all the time and takes watch over him when he sleeps and...
Mr. Patterson don't know true quality in a lad.
Mr. Patterson's outside the captain's cabin right now.
I'm such a black knight.
He hates me.
And we your friends. Come along, Frenchy.
There's your Mr. Patterson for you, sleeping under the stars from a belaying pin.
If he awakens, he'll raise an awful row.
Oh, you know where that key is to the dollars, lad?
Yes, but if Mr. Patterson wakes up...
Frenchy.
Oui.
Throw Mr. Patterson overboard.
Oui.
Wait. I read in the book, it was called Tales of the Ocean Sea, how bad pirates used to tie iron to the legs of victims.
Oh.
So they wouldn't float. So I brought a piece of iron along. Here it is.
Frenchy, lash the iron to Mr. Patterson's leg so he won't float.
Oui.
Let's to see the captain now, lad.
Yes, sir. Captain's a very sound sleeper. Here's his gun.
Be careful how you point.
Blimey. Shot the captain right between the eyes. That's what you did, lad. Right between the eyes, I tell you. Deader than a pickled mackerel from Cooper's Coast, he is. Blimey. Oh, lad, I know how you feel, lad. Accident, weren't it, lad? Yeah. You go on and weep, lad. It'll do you good.
That night, Andrew cried his heart out. So forlorn was he for having shot his father's friend and his captain that he did not venture above deck. And that's where all the activity was.
Here, tie this piece of iron to the captain's leg, Frenchy.
Oui.
And using a ship-shank knot and a 25-pound weight, they prepared the captain for sinking. Sank him. These few hours' activity was known as piracy. There was also murder. Altogether a night of perfidy, sprung as it did from the innocence of a 16-year-old boy's suggestions. Just because the youth has read a long-since-banned book, Tales of the Ocean Sea, just because his father had gotten him a berth aboard ship, just because his father wanted to make a man of him. But Andrew still had a long way to go.
Boy, boy.
Never knew a soul could acorn like this.
But it can. We. Where's the key to the dollars, boy?
There. Beneath the captain's pillow.
Frenchy. We. Now we'll fetch.
Wait.
Yes, lad.
What did you do with the captain?
As we did with Mr. Patterson.
Now there are eight of us. But Smitty cannot work.
No, not since the flogging you give in.
And have you noticed that Mr. Strawn is feeble and recovers poorly from his drinking?
It's true. What are you saying, lad?
Nothing.
Reggie?
We?
There are eight of us now, but two of us ain't very useful. Ain't no sense having them around to divide those dollars with. Frenchy?
Oui.
What Mr. Hyman and Frenchy did was unlock that section of the hold where the dollars were kept, remove the casks, and insert two of their shipmates, Mr. Smith and Mr. Strawn. It was then that the lad Andrew appeared on deck.
What are you going to do with those tar pots, Mr. Hyman? Fire them and lead the smoke into the hold where Smithy and Strawn are?
Why, then they'd suffocate. Frenchy?
Oui.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. Hear Marlena Dietrich as Diane LaVolta in a new adventure in colorful Spain. The sultry-voiced chanteuse helps a great bullfighter out of his difficulties in a story titled The Man Who Wanted to Die. Remember, tomorrow and every Thursday night on most of these same stations, the Star's Address brings you Marlena Dietrich in Time for Love. And now once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics and his report to you on The Good Ship Jane, Why She Became Flotsam. Some words about piracy. Next to being a sailor, being a pirate is man's oldest profession since he took to the sea. There is literature concerning this type of criminality all the way back to the Phoenicians. The Vikings were great pirates, and you'll be interested to know that during the Roman civil wars, the city itself was all but starved to death by the incursion of the old Etruscan pirates. Now, many of you undoubtedly think that piracy is a matter of the crew of one ship plundering another. Not so. As far back as the plunder of the barkentine Athena in 1702, the Admiralty ruled that a crew which mutinies and murders its captain and plunders its cargo and steers the vessel off course, perhaps toward a different continent, a crew which does these things is lumped under the heading of pirates. Therefore, the crew of the schooner Jane of Gibraltar were pirates. Of this, there can be no doubt.
Well, I say let's take her to Africa, mates.
Africa!
Then Africa it is.
Helmsman, change your course. South by southeast.
Aye, aye, south by southeast.
Africa it is, lads, with Spanish dollars to fling and Spanish dollars to spend. Lad, Andrew.
Yes, Captain?
You're nearly done, lad.
Aye, Captain. Each of us, now that we are six, will receive $6,300.
Aha. You hear that, lads? 6,300 Spanish dollars for each of us. Oh, Morocco, Tangiers, Cairo.
Captain?
Oh, you like Africa, you bonny lad. Whoa, the sights I can show you. And you, the curly-headed blondie lad you are, you'll have the ladies nippier than Thurston's kitty.
Captain.
Yes, lad.
The African seas are filled with pirates.
What are you saying, lad?
I've heard. Corsairs from Tripoli and Turks and Saracens.
What?
I'm frightened.
Well, then be frightened, lad. What do you expect us to turn tail about and go to England, maybe, or...
Scotland.
Scotland?
With their lonely shores and their long, lonely beaches, we could get ashore and nobody would know what.
Wouldn't be any pirates, either.
Oh, no.
Scotland. Bonnie Scotland.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Scotland it is. Helmsman, change your course. North or northwest.
And they sailed in that direction for 17 days. It was a singularly uneventful voyage. In passing other ships, they hoisted the American colors, identified themselves as the Rover, 30 days from New York, bound for Archangel. And Hyman went about clothed in the captain's green greatcoat. The boy Andrew stayed below most of the trip, reading. But one day, when Hyman brought him his breakfast, the boy looked up from his book and he said,
"When are you going to give orders to scuttle the ship, Captain?"
Scuttle it, lad.
Else there'll be surely someone in Scotland who'll recognize the ship as a Jane and ask of the captain.
Scuttle it, I say.
Off the Cape of Stornoway.
Off the Cape of Stornoway.
And two nights later, within sight of the Scottish coast at Stornoway, you remember, Hyman began to drill holes in the bottom of the boat.
Here's an axe.
Sir. What is it, you bonny lad?
I think you should give orders to man the longboat.
Oh, get your backs into it, men. You, what's the matter with you, Tora?
Tide against us! We never make it shore!
Oh! Hold, I tell you!
There she goes! There she goes!
What?
I lost me my oar! Catch! She goes!
Ah, you stupid lump thumb! Down with them Prescott symbol! Ah, now, lad!
Never! Oh, never!
Ah, what are you saying, lad?
You'll never get the shore! I'll drown in our chest of money. We'll lie at the bottom of the sea.
Oh, now, lad.
The things you forced me to do, the terrible things.
Lad, lad.
The awful things.
Now hear this. Now hear this. What the sea did. It sent a huge and wonderful wave to the scene. And this huge and wonderful wave did this. Lifted high the longboat, the dollars, and the sailors, and on a narrow strand of beach, put them down again. This huge and wonderful wave.
Phew, blimey. Hey, ain't this something, Frenchy?
Oui.
Wave tossing us, boat and all, right to shore. Lad, Andrew, lad.
Yes?
We're saved.
Yes.
Yes, we're saved. We're saved. Give a cheer, lads. We're saved. And it's this bonny, bonny lad that's the cause of it all. This lad, this Andrew. This curly, blundering Andrew lad. Oh, lad, it is a great and good luck thing to know you. To sail with your lights.
Thank you.
Thank you, he says. Hey, such a lad. Such a lad you are.
But the rest of that night was a terrible one. The fury of the skies and the sea over that narrow strand, and six men huddled there, not daring to move, lest they lose their way in the dark and stumble into the torrent. Yet, even in these small hours of despair, they had presence of mind enough to bury, each of them, part of their Spanish dollars.
And we should take an oath of secrecy.
And they, each of them, took a terrible oath, swore never to reveal what had happened, nor of the money, nor the murders. A good thing, too. For the next day, a suddenly becalmed and sunny day...
Ahoy! Ahoy there!
A group of men came running up the beach toward them.
Ahoy there!
Hello!
What do you hear?
Our boat broke up in the sea, and praise be for a sturdy longboat. Who be you?
Roderick MacIver.
We'll be off your fated catch, the Betsy out of San Francisco.
I am MacIver, surveyor of customs. These are my men.
Oh?
And we'll want to look at your sea chest.
Oh.
You, Colonel, open me that sea chest, for instance, and I'll have a look. Now, we'll see. Yeah, what's this? Dollars now. Spanish dollars. Now you.
Please, sir.
How come a blundering boy like you with such scurvy lookers, eh?
Yes, sir.
Colonel, stand guard here while I fetch a brace of constables to this spot. This has the looks of I don't know what, but I didn't like it.
Please, sir.
How old be you, boy?
16, sir. There's never been a razor to my cheek.
Hail ya.
If I could see my father. Sir?
Yes, lad?
Could I walk with you?
Fairly hated boy could be my own son, almost. Surely, walk with me.
I have something to tell you, sir.
Oh, so what happened?
Sir.
Lad, what?
They held me prisoner out of Malta and murdered Captain and Mr. Patterson and nice Mr. Smith and Mr. Strawn. They suffocated the nice Mr. Smith and Strawn with smoke from a tar barrel and stole those Spanish dollars.
Are you saying the truth?
I'll take an oath on it.
And you'll so testify, lad?
I want to.
Go on, lad. Continue with your story.
And I struggled with Mr. Hyman with the pistol, and he overcame me and killed Captain.
And then?
I had that one who we call Frenchy tie iron to Captain's leg and throw him overboard.
And then?
Suffocated two others with smoke from a tar barrel.
How old are you, lad?
16. My father's far away in Malta.
I must tell you, boy, as a father myself and as judge in the court of law, that ne'er have I witnessed such a courageous lad as you. You are as candid a witness as e'er appeared before me. Your manners are modest, and your statements are sincere and distinct. And it is to your due that justice is trying the case of these men, Peter Hyman and the Frenchman Francois Gautier. You may step down, boy. Peter Hyman and Francois Gautier. The rest of your crew has been dismissed as not guilty of the heinous crimes as charged. But the jury has found the two of you to be beasts of the sea and guilty as charged. Therefore, I announce to you the sentence of death, which will be forthwith put into execution. Though your crimes as charged be murder and piracy, to my mind your guilt is of a far greater kind. The scar is slashed across innocence. The innocence of that youth sitting there, gentle child of blundling curl, bravely hiding the scalding hurt. Vipers! And upon the second Wednesday of January next to come, you will be dead.
I have here an account of the execution. The two men, Peter Hyman and Francois Gautier, ascended the drop at 11:20. They remained on the platform for some minutes, being administered as they were by men of the cloth. But observers noted that neither one seemed to listen to prayers, nor did they repeat any supplications. Rather did they merely stand there and shake their heads as if, some observers say, they did not believe what was happening to them. In the pressing crowd of onlookers was seen Master Andrew Camelier, close to the front, smiling and bowing to those who recognized him. Andrew Camelier, I should tell you, never went back to Malta, nor to sea. He was married next year to the comely daughter of a widower, and when his father-in-law shot himself to death in 6 months' time, he inherited a large sum of money.
In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. The Good Ship Jane, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. Music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Gary Montgomery was heard as Andrew and Van Wright as Hyman. Featured in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Paul Frees, Steve Roberts, and William Johnstone. Bob Lamon speaking. Now here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Suffolk, England, in the year 1676. We will concern ourselves at that time with a rousing croquet match, a fine old castle at stake, winner take all. It's listed in my files as Roger Nims, how he, though dead, won the game. Thank you. Good night.
This coming Sunday, CBS Radio's Department of Public Affairs offers a documented progress report on the Negro in America, titled The High Mountain. Narrators will be William H. Hasty, United States Court of Appeals judge, and Admiral Alan G. Kirk. The same production team that brought you Bomb Target USA, 38th Parallel, USA Parole File 732, and other hard-hitting factual documents about life in America, now turns its attention on the High Mountain for a look at the progress and problems of the Negro in America. This Sunday, on most of these same stations. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from this as your FBI crime classics, past episodes of this show and all the others at relicradio.com. There's also a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, would like to help support it all, click on that. Thanks as always to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.